Liberty, Honor, and Country. Today's Tuesday, April 8th, 2014. This is Sally Baptist, and thank you for tuning in tonight to American Freedom Watch Radio with Karen Schoen and John Estabrook. And tonight we have Neil Royce with us. The call-in number is 347-857-4364. Press 1 if you'd like to speak on the air. If you don't press 1, we won't go to you, and you can just listen via the phone. But press 1 if you'd like to join the discussion, or you can go into the chat room and submit questions and comments in there. Now, before we get started on all the good stuff, I just got a couple of things I have to share with you. I was really so proud of John Bonehead, Bain, or whatever his name is, this morning or today, whenever it was, he's out there saying, I want to know who's going to go to jail. He wasn't worried about who was going to get blamed for the Tea Party, the IRS and the Tea Party stuff. He just wants to know who's going to jail. And it's like, wow, isn't he getting tough? I was just really impressed. Yeah, right. And then the other is, once again, our friends at the GOP are out there aggressively pushing John Ellis Bush. They think we need 3 Bushes in the office, which I don't think we do. And, of course, Fox News is one of their biggest campaign contributors on that one. They do everything that they're told to by the GOP. And when you think about it, the GOP pushing John Ellis Bush, that means they are pushing Common Core and they're pushing amnesty, which they're definitely doing the amnesty thing in the background, trying to put that out there without anybody paying any attention. And, of course, John Ellis Bush is the heart and soul of Common Core / communism. And then we did have one good thing. There was a Common Core in California, this lady, and I swear I can't remember her name, but they actually had a restraining order. The school put a restraining order on her because her son was going there and handing out information telling others how to opt out of Common Core in California. It was actually funny in respect that it was the kid that was pushing it, but then they went and put a restraining order on the mother. But the word is even getting out to California not to do Common Core because of how crazy it is. So those are my big rants for tonight. I got lots of stuff to talk about when it comes to the Tallahassee three-ring circus and Florida notary hearings. They actually had Florida notary public hearings this week or within the past week, and I'll talk about that on Thursday. On that note, I think I've done enough ranting for 2 minutes. And Karen, how are you doing? And Neil, hey, and have at it.
Hi, Sally.
Hey. Hi there, Sally. Everyone, you're listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman, and that is on Tuesday from 8 o'clock in the evening until 10, and on Red State Talk Radio. And that is on Wednesday at 12 in the afternoon and Sunday at 12 in the evening. That is redstatetalkradio.com. Please visit our websites, agenda21today.com, panhandlepatriots.com, saveamericafoundation.com, karenschoen.com, and votekarenschoen.com. Woo! And welcome, and hi, Neil. How are you doing? John.
Hi, great.
John is on a ship right now, and he is on his way to Africa because they will be drilling for oil, something that America has forgotten what made us great, and especially all of the lies surrounding fossil fuels, so how to get cheap sources of energy. Before we started, since we have the ladies on the phone today, or on our show today, President Obama just created another executive order giving women the same equal pay as men for doing the same job. I think he forgot to read the equal, we have to sign it every time in the business, the Equal Opportunities Act, where it already says that. Now, the question is, first of all, why in the White House are women paid less? And what do you think the motivation of was to put this executive order in place when we already have a bill in place that says exactly that? Maybe he doesn't read the bills and he can only understand the one that he writes? I'm trying to figure that one out. So maybe somebody can help me.
Yeah, I'm all for, Karen, these women getting the same pay if they do the same job, not that they have the same job title.
Well,
and I am a woman, and I do not go along with this. I have been in circumstances that were life-threatening, in fact, where a woman police officer, when I had to call for an emergency 911 at a place of where I was working with two guys in the store with knives threatening customers, it was a very small place, she pulls up, gets out, people are trying to get out, she sees what's going on, and all they had was two knives, and she's got a gun and a shotgun in the front seat of her car. She decides to get in her car and pull off over to the other side of the street and call for backup. So she left me in the leech. I mean, I called and I said, don't ever send her out or any other female that's going to act like that again.
Well, Neil, you're right. I do believe that women doing the same job as men should get equal pay, but we already have a law that says that.
Right.
Why would you think he's putting out an executive order that says that? I believe personally it's so that he can find his next division and corral the women, which he will then use as his dividing line, because the Republicans will have a war on women, or somebody will, it's just another way for me to feel that he's trying to make another class of people. And I don't think we know he doesn't read the Constitution. We know he doesn't read the bills, this wonderful constitutional scholar. But doesn't anybody look at what's going on in the White House? There's plenty of women that are there, but they're not paid the same that the men are paid.
Well, I mean, that's the part. You can't make this stuff up. And you're right. It's all political gamesmanship. It's all the same. Whatever they think is going to divide people and whatever to move some crazy agenda that they got going, it has nothing to do with reality. And especially when you think, like you said, here they don't practice what they preach.
That's the big one. That is the big one. You know, it's just another example of the horrific dictator in chief and what he thinks he can accomplish by dividing the country. I'm also concerned. I was out today and I was campaigning and I met some wonderful farmers and wonderful people in the district. And here we go again, because out in Nevada there is actually a showdown going on, folks. A farmer who has been grazing his cattle on Nevada land because he's a Nevada taxpayer. He has every right to use that land. He's been using it in his family for 40 years. And all of a sudden the EPA says, no, you can't use that land and you can't graze your cattle over there. This is a big standoff on land grabs, folks. This is very, 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 very critical. And we all should be watching and giving this farmer support, because he is 100% correct. When the state owns land, the federal government has no right to come in and tell them how they should be using it. But, of course, then we have the problem which says, oh, if you take this grant, then you'll have to follow our regulations. So I think that's something that we have to make sure that our legislators say no to the grants, because that's exactly what happens when we say yes to the grants. So we have a farmer in Nevada that we all want to support and give him our best for standing up as a patriot and not caving to the EPA, and we're going to have to watch that very closely. And ladies...
Karen.
Yes?
Excuse me. Just one quick question on that. If I remember correctly, didn't this rancher say he took time off and was studying the law? He was going to become a lawyer because it cost him too much to hire one or something. So he's studying the law, and he's going to represent himself because of the cost of a lawyer or something to that effect.
I didn't read that as an update, but that could be very well true.
Okay.
That could be very well true. I did read that with someone, and it could have been him. It could be from him. I don't know. But... this is something that the EPA is going to control our land and our food if we the people don't start protecting our land, protecting our businesses, and using the Constitution. It's there, folks. All the tools we have are in the little toolbox called the Constitution, and we're not using it. And I'm so glad that we're going to have our special guest on this evening who's going to tell us solutions, how we can use these laws. But this is going to be going on and on and on. I also spoke to farmers who said that they are very concerned now because the EPA wants to do a cow tax. You know, those cows, they expel a lot of methane, and methane must be the cause of global warming / pooling / maybe we could use all the methane to control the sun, because that's really the issue. But just think, folks, look at the price of beef right now and think, why is beef double of what it was last year? Well, there's several reasons. One is because money is being printed at an extravagant rate, which makes our dollar diminish. Our dollar is less, and that means we need more of them to buy the things that we would normally buy. The cost of fertilizer has doubled. The cost of gasoline has doubled. All of these things are what makes a rancher have to filter in to the price of beef.
Don't forget the cost of hay, Karen.
The cost of hay. The cost
hay's
of
gone
grass.
Up 2.5 times, yep.
Yep, the cost of grass. Putting our corn in our gas tanks instead of where it should be, on the shelf for grain, for feed. Folks, these are the programs that are destroying America on purpose, as we have been discussing over and over again, and this is what's causing the escalating price of food that nobody is talking about, or at least very few people are talking about. I was talking to a rancher today who said that if the cow tax, because of the cow farts, come into place, that he may have to reconsider doing business because right now he's breaking even. Can you name one business where you want to be in business to break even? I don't know any. But they want to be in business just to break even. That's not what business is about. The farmers have to expend a fortune before that food gets on your table. And folks, if you think the price of food is high, you better start saving food today because it's going to get higher. Not only that, Neil, I don't know if you've noticed like I have, I went to make a recipe the other day, and now I have to use two packages because we can no longer purchase a cup of anything. A cup has now become 6 ounces. A pound is now 14 ounces or 12 ounces. Just go try to make a recipe.
Yeah.
Where is this all coming from? Well, we know where it's coming from.
Well, you know, the very sad thing, Karen, about the EPA is that they legally have no right to make their own rules and regulations. This is supposed to be Congress's job, and there again, Congress is failing miserably, and I think
Absolutely.
It's being done on purpose.
No, Neil, I didn't used to think that until recently, and Sally, what you said is 100% true. I heard John Boehner say this yesterday about how he's going to go after Lois Lerner or whoever is in charge of the EPA, and they belong in jail. And the next sentence out of my mouth was, oh, he must be running for office.
Funny how that works,
week,
isn't it?
Yeah, last week he wanted the Tea Partiers to be in jail. He's going to do everything to crush the Tea Partiers. But yesterday on Megyn Kelly, he was, oh, the Tea Partiers are wonderful. The Tea Partiers are this, they're that. And we have to make sure that these people are held accountable. We're going to hold them accountable, right?
let me tell you something, if you don't already know. He was supposed to be at this meeting with these radical left and rights and whatever in Amarillo Island
to get rid of the conservatives.
He was supposed to be at that meeting, and at the last minute, he is sending two other people to fill in for him. So I'd like to know what excuse he can get on TV and do a bare, flat-face lie to whoever he was talking to, Megyn Kelly or whoever.
Megyn Kelly.
And lie to, and see, this is why people have got to stop watching this garbage.
Yes.
You've got to start doing your own homework.
You are.
These
so
people
right.
lie, and you cannot believe a thing they say unless you investigate it.
Exactly. And you
actions speak louder than words.
Well, we have things that we can do using the Constitution. And my favorite article has now become Article 4, Section 4, which states, again, and I will repeat it, every American is guaranteed a Republican form of government. Republican means elected officials. And just like what Neil said, did you elect anybody in the EPA? I certainly don't remember. I can't think of one person that I elected to be in the EPA. I can't think of one reason why I would want to even be associated with the EPA right now, because the EPA to me is out of control. And they have been out of control for a long time. They do not have any environmental program that I in any way, shape, or form could believe in or trust in anymore, because I haven't found one. They even tell me they're lying.
Well, that, and because they're working directly with the United Nations and their environmental programs and all their other programs on top of it, plus the National Association of Regional Councils. I mean,
yes.
You know, what better outfit to be engaged with?
Explain to everybody for a minute what a regional council is for those new listeners.
Well, a regional council, there's a national group. It's called the NARC, and they are a voice of regionalism. This came from President Nixon. He divided the country into 10 sections when he was in office by an executive order. Then when President Carter got in there, he did two more executive orders, and it even states that they were totally unconstitutional, what he did, and put more of an impact on each and every state. Like in the state of Florida, we are divided into 11 regional planning councils, and it states on their website that they are the voice of regionalism. And regionalism, my friends, is communism. It has no borders. So we even have 9 counties that are in one plan, and 2 of the counties cross the state Georgia line. Then you lose your representation. These are unelected officials. They do not answer to you. So if anything should ever come up in the future, and it could be a smaller problem, it could be something major, they're going to laugh at you. They don't have to answer you. They don't have to abide by your wishes. They don't even have to let you speak. This is communism.
Yes, and we are seeing more and more of that as time goes on, and we're going to be seeing even more of that as time goes on. Regional councils are probably the most dangerous form of government ever facing America. And Neil, you are so right. Borders are erased, which means in Florida, the people in Florida are now crossed over into the people of Georgia. Well, that's really nice. If I wanted to live in Georgia and I wanted to abide by Georgia law, which I do not, because Georgia has an income tax. Let's take an easy one, income tax. Georgia has an income tax. Florida does not. When you have a crossover region governing your body, what are you supposed to follow? Georgia law, Florida law, or no law at all? And what's going to happen is the regional programs or the regional councils will begin to make the law. And as Neil said, wait a minute, we didn't elect those people. How are they making anything? That is the biggest problem I feel and the most dangerous for anyone that has private property to not understand the effects of regionalism.
Mm-hmm.
We have been, today I was over at one of the Republican meetings, and they had a meeting on the convention of the states, which it looked like Florida is going to pass. And so, ladies, I'm curious to find out who would be your pick of delegates to go to this convention from the Florida representatives. Can you find one?
I've been listening to some of the Senate hearings talking about this thing. It's like, I don't trust any of them. Oh, my, oh, dear Lord, whatever. But
well, us Floridians can't even, I'm sorry, us Floridians, Sally, can't even trust Mickey Mouse anymore.
Oh, that's another thing we have to talk about. I don't think people realize that one. But, Sally, go ahead.
No, I was just saying I have been listening to the Florida Channel through the legislative sessions where they've been having different committee meetings, and I've been hearing some of the talk on this, and it's just scary to listen to what these people are doing. It just the more I listen, the more it's like, oh dear Lord, help us all, and the more it's like, this is why I don't like any of these people. You know, so it's just it's scary when you listen to it. It's nonsense.
I know, that's the problem. I raised my hand. I happen to know the gentleman that was giving the presentation, and he's really nice. And I raised my hand, and he said, okay, Karen, I know it's going to be a hard question. And I said, no, I only have a very simple question. Who in the Florida legislature would you trust to go to this convention? And he said, I knew it was going to be a hard question.
Can't trust any of them.
Why are we doing this? If we don't believe that the Constitution is broken, why are we fixing the Constitution? Why don't we fix the people that broke it and don't pay attention to it? And that's really what needs to be done. It's not
yes.
The Constitution that's the issue. But you know what else they shared? He said that this program will probably not take place for at least 4 or 5 years. Hello? We don't have 4 or 5 years. I don't think we have 4 or 5 minutes to sit on our hands and do nothing. Because just listen to some of these states and the laws that they're passing, although I'm proud of some of the states because they are actually paying attention and nullifying some of the federal overreach of laws. And those people that think that nullification is not in the Constitution doesn't have say the word nullify. What it does is it says federal government will have these powers only. So if the federal government does a bill that is not one of those powers, then we don't have to pay attention to it. It's not nullifying. It's just not constitutional, which means it's void, which means it can't be enforced. That's not nullification, folks. That's just not enforcing laws that can't be enforced. And none of these laws can be enforced because, as we have discovered, they're not even laws. Rules and statutes are not laws. And that leads me to Disney, who seem to have written their own laws in the state of Florida. And I don't know if people realize that, but Disney is living under a totally different set of rules. And that leads me to the next question, which is, if Disney is following rules and regulations from 2002, And we are forced into following the rules and regulations of today. That gives Disney a way unfair advantage, wouldn't you think?
Oh, yeah. I remember Walt Disney was the genius to come up with this whole plan to whatever the deal was with whoever was in government at that time when all this was going on, back in the 50s, I guess, where they literally bought their own little country, a state within the state, and they owned everything, and they had all the rights to make their own laws, their own whatever. They were truly outside of the state government in just about every respect.
Okay, so if a person is going to, let's say, build something in Disney, and they don't have to follow all of these ridiculous programs and policies and new codes and new everything.
Taxes, everything.
That changes everything in as much as the cost of doing business. So a Disney product can start out being a lot less expensive. Do they have to follow the same laws for agriculture? If they're not following building codes that are the same building codes that we have to follow, do they have to is that the same? Is that the same for agriculture? We have to find out about that. That's a good question. I would like to know the answer to that.
Yeah, the environmental codes too. They don't follow those.
Oh, you mean if you're going to use a incandescent light bulb, you can.
I think we ought to make a road that goes around them with no off-ramps and let them have their own little government.
Well, I think that we should tell our legislators that the Constitution says that we, the people, we all have equal opportunity, and they made a protected class out of the Disney property, and I think we should all follow Disney's regulations.
Yeah, but be careful there, because we're going to end up in a situation like this Article 5 convention. You can never depend on who's going to come in and take charge. That's the scary part.
That you're right.
That's the scary part. I say that we just get the information out on them, go after our legislators, and ask them just where they got the authority to do this.
Yes, that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good question.
Because it was totally unconstitutional, for one thing. And where they got the authority to give somebody tax breaks and let them make all their own voting boards and everything else. I want to know where they got this authority from. They had to really be swinging some loopholes on this one, I'll tell you.
Yes. Well, it has to be money payoff.
Well, and yeah. Well, there's billions.
There had to be payoffs on that. I can't see how it would have been any other different. I just think that I'd be curious to know who was paid off. Was that who was president? Who was governor at that time?
Who in the 50s? It was 50. Well, our legislator passed the act in 66. It doesn't help either.
No,
I can't remember that.
I bet it was a Democrat.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it was, because there was a slew of them right in a row. I remember looking at it. But I think this is something, information we need to get to the Canadian Free Press, all other websites that are patriot sites, conservative sites throughout the nation. See if we can't even hook up with some press people over in Europe. Let them know what a wonderful thing they are. How about Australia? Tons of people come from the UK and Australia to go there.
I wonder if they did this in other countries. Does that mean that Disney is autonomous? Every place is a Disney World? I wonder if Disney is autonomous in California also.
I never looked that up. I just looked up this one because I knew they were all UN and Agenda 21. But when they first started this, they got with the Nature Conservancy here in Florida, and it stated that that was the first step in Florida for sustainable development.
Exactly. That was the test ground, aren't we lucky?
Yep.
And the only difference between Disneyland and Detroit is that Disneyland was run by a private corporation and Detroit is run by the government. Look at the difference. The other thing is that Disney got all of these favored subsidies, which made them extremely profitable. Man, I'd love to start a city if I didn't have to pay taxes and didn't have to jump through hoops and didn't have to wait to get permitted and was able to use code when code made sense from 2002 and not have to do what I had to do today. And let's not forget, folks, the Disney sustainable development is voluntary. Nobody's forcing anybody to move there. So when you move there, should you move there? First of all, if you work for Disney and you live there, you don't own anything. So that's one of the problems that I see. You have to do everything Disney, which is another problem. And heaven forbid you speak out about Disney, I'm sure they'd lose their job.
If not more.
You're right, if not more. But on the other side, it is voluntary, which is not what they're talking about on the sustainable developments today. There's nothing voluntary when the EPA says, we're going to tax your cattle because they fart. Where's the brainchild behind that one? Oh, it must be the methane gas. Could you imagine?
Oh, you know, thank God the EPA wasn't around during the dinosaur age.
That's a good one, Neil. Maybe we should round up all the cattle and put them in a fart house, and then you just make them fart inside, and they can't go out and play.
I want to know what would the common law grand jury have to say about cows farting? We do have someone here who'd like to talk about the common law grand jury.
Well, that's what we're talking about, folks. We believe in solutions. And I personally, although I know that the Convention of the States is a solution, the fact that nobody's going to be able to do anything for the next 5 years doesn't make me real happy. And the fact that I can't find anybody to trust to go to this convention doesn't make me real happy. And the fact that I don't believe the Constitution is broken and I don't believe it's what we need to fix. I believe in people power. And so, Roger, we are very happy to have you on the show with us this evening. And Roger is a solutions-oriented person and is working with a group of people to promote and install common law grand juries. Thank you, Roger, for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, first of all, you're on the line with myself, Karen Schoen, Neil Rice, and Sally Baptist. And we are all very much enthused about what your project is because I do believe that it gives the people the ability to use the tools that our founders gave us and provided us. It gives us the ability to actually use the Constitution instead of beat it up.
For sure, and our founders gave us a great document. It has been proven to work very, very well. It led to the most productive growth, economic growth known to man. And at the end of the day, it is still a very valid document. Our problem is we're not holding anybody accountable to it.
Well, this is one way, I believe, to hold people accountable. So before we put the cart before the horse, because we do have some listeners that unfortunately don't know what a common law grand jury is, Roger, please tell everyone how they can reach you and the website and what is a common law grand jury.
Sure. The name of the organization is the NationalLibertyAlliance.org. That's the website, and it's got a lot of information having to do with the background. But let me just try to summarize the definition and a little bit of the history of the common law grand jury. It goes all the way back to the development of the legal systems in Europe. There were two different legal systems that developed. The continental countries, Germany, France included, developed what's called a civil law system. And under that system, the philosophy is man is both smart enough and moral enough to design a set of laws that will lead to a productive, just, and happy society. The English thought very differently. They did not believe that man was both smart enough and moral enough. So instead, they said, we must look to nature for our laws, and we must make our laws compatible with nature. And the net result of that is a very different legal system with much fewer laws, and they're common sense laws. They're really simple and common sense laws. So that's the foundation where two different, very different legal systems. Then in 1215 AD, there was a little document called the Magna Carta. And in Article 61 of the Magna Carta is defined a group of 25 barons at the time, landowning people, who could at any time decide that they had enough information from a complaint that the government had done something wrong. And these 25 people would then make a judgment and could, in fact, hold the government accountable, including the king. The only thing was out of bounds is they could not jail the king or his family, but they could do whatever else they needed to restore the victim. So in common law, there's two fundamental principles about common law. One is for there to be an injury, for every injury, there must be a remedy. And the second is for there to be a crime, there must be a victim, and the state cannot be the victim. So it's very simple, very common sense. And as you roll the camera forward from 1215 all the way up to 1776, this is a fundamental tool used by society to keep the government from abusing the people. In fact, it turns out it has three fundamental functions. The number one function is to prevent abuse of common people from unjust charges by those in power. It's number one. Number two, it is to be able to investigate anything it wants to investigate. It can go into any part of government, elected or unelected government, or private industry, and investigate anything it wants to investigate. And upon evidence that it produces and evidence donated to it by we the people, make sure the right bad actors are being indicted or presented and therefore have to stand trial. And then the third and possibly the most important function is it has the right to go into every nook and cranny of government and root out corruption. And the definition of corruption includes anything repugnant to our Constitution. So this is where it gets very interesting. At the time of our founding in 1776, the Declaration of Independence, think about the situation a minute before the Declaration was signed and a minute afterwards. A minute before, the highest-ranking sovereign in the system is the King of England. And it is the highest-ranking sovereign in the system that gets to decide what is law and what isn't law. Now we snip the cord to the king by signing the Declaration of Independence, and a minute after that, where is the highest-ranking sovereign in the new system? Each of the colonies become independent sovereign nations, and the highest-ranking sovereign could have been a king. Many of the colonists argued, let's get a new king. George, would you be our king? But no, our founders were smart enough that they had had enough tyranny in their lives and experiences that they said, no, we're going to make the highest-ranking sovereign in our system, we the people. So whenever we the people get together in a group of 25, it can be called a common law grand jury, and it becomes the highest ranking court of record in the land. And this is pretty profound, because what it means is not even the U.S. Supreme Court can challenge a decision made by a common law grand jury.
Okay. Now, where would we find this in the Constitution?
Well, the founders were very smart, because they decided that it was such an essential element to the keeping the government centered on the Constitution, to keeping the government within the bounds defined by the document, that they put it in both the Fifth and the Seventh Amendment. And even though the progressives in 1946 used an opportunity to rewrite the U.S. Penal Code, the Criminal Code, and they put in a footnote that they considered the common law grand jury obsolete, even though they did that, they cannot obsolete it because it's part of the Constitution. So one of the linchpin decisions was made in 1992 when U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, in the case U.S. versus Williams, in the 6-3 majority opinion, wrote that the grand jury is not part of the legislative, executive, or judicial branches of our government. Instead, it is a constitutional fixture in and of its own right, owned by we the people for the benefit of we the people, and that the judiciary system does not have supervisory authority over it. So although the progressives succeeded in making our common law grand jury go dormant, and we let that happen, we the people let that happen, we're now reestablishing them around the country. All 50 states are actively developing their programs. Three leading states are New York, Pennsylvania, and Florida. Here in Florida, we have all 67 counties have reconstituted their common law grand jury, and we're in the final steps in three of the counties of negotiating with the Board of County Commissioners, who has both the authority and the responsibility, according to Florida statutes, to provide space and budgets for the grand jury. Now, I'd like to clear up one point of confusion. Frequently, people say, well, don't we already have a grand jury? Yes, we do. It's called a statute or a statutory grand jury. That is to say that it rules on statutes. But statutes were, in fact, invented to tell the government employees how to do their job. They do not apply to we the people. Common law applies to we the people. We're founded as a common law nation. Florida was founded as a common law state. So these statutes don't apply to us unless we voluntarily accept them. And there are many tricks used in our judiciary system to convince us to go ahead and submit to the statutes.
Okay. That is really so. Let's recap for a second. Florida statute says that this is a legal and binding arm of government. Is that correct?
Well, the statutes that I'm familiar with that talk about the grand jury specifically call out that it is the Board of County Commissioners' responsibility in each county to provide space. And if the grand jury comes and asks for space and it isn't available, they are to make space available. In addition, they are to provide budget for the operations of the grand jury. The grand jury can investigate anything. It is not a trial jury. It does not decide guilt or innocence. It decides who deserves to stand trial and who doesn't.
Okay. So the grand jury indicts, for example, let's take what's going on in Pinellas County. That's an easy one. The people in Pinellas County passed a referendum or a bill that said that there were term limits on the commissioners in Pinellas County, and the commissioners refused to leave office.
Well,
so
a
common law grand jury could be convened to state to those commissioners that they should be tried for not obeying the law of the people who wanted this law passed.
Absolutely. It would be very likely someone would complain to the grand jury with some evidence. There are 4 full-time administrative investigators that work for and on behalf of the grand jury. They would try to gather further evidence and then speak directly to the commissioner saying, look, right now you're not following your oath of office, you're not following the laws, and therefore we'd like to know, when are you going to do it? If they continue to refuse, then the administrative investigators would present the evidence to the 25, and they would evaluate the evidence and take a decision whether to, in this case, present. And it's called a presentment when it is based on information and evidence not from the prosecutor. If it's coming from the government prosecutor, it's called an indictment.
Okay, so coming from the common law grand jury is called a presentment.
Well, it's where does the evidence come from? If the prosecutor assembled the evidence and gave it to the jury, then they would result in an indictment. If instead the grand jury got it from we the people and or developed it on its own, it is called a presentment.
Okay. Now, let's say can you explain the process that a county must go through or the people must go through in order to put one of these in their county?
Sure.
I had one other question before you did that.
Sure.
If a county, let's say Walton County has a common law grand jury and Holmes County does not, could the people in Walton County present to the people in Holmes County?
Yes.
Or it can only be in the county?
Yes. So the jurisdiction of any county's common law grand jury is anywhere within the borders of the state of Florida.
Oh.
Anywhere within the borders of the state. So you could have one in the next county or you could have one, quite far away, and they can reach into any county and issue an indictment or a presentment based on the evidence that they review. So in addition, though, as we gain the critical element in this last step of the 3 most advanced counties in the state, which are St. John's, Marion County, and Manatee County, we're at the last step where we are issuing a writ of mandamus to the court, to the Board of County Commissioners, basically demanding access to the grand jury room. And we really need the access to the grand jury room to be seen and perceived by the community as authentic. It's a
right.
very important step.
Right, so what is the procedure to set up, starting from scratch? Let's pretend that we have many listeners that have absolutely no idea what you're talking about, but
right.
they know that something is wrong. They want to take action. What
right.
should they do?
Well, so the first thing to understand is that so far all 67 counties in Florida are reconstituted, but if they do want to participate, they should go to the nationallibertyalliance.org website, go under the Jurist tab, read up about Jurist documents and Jurist orientation so they prepare themselves so they could be active as jurists. And to do that, they need to sign in and get a password so they gain access to that. But if another county that isn't reconstituted wanted to constitute, say a Georgia county or Alabama or South Carolina or something like that, basically 5 or 6 simple steps. Number one, you have to secure a public meeting room. In Manatee County, we use the public meeting room in the county library. We secured a reservation on a date. Then we issued a press release to email lists and to the press newspapers of the date and time of the meeting. And the subject we said is, we the people are having a meeting to discuss the reestablishment of our common law grand jury in Manatee County, basically. At the time of the meeting, we show about a 35-minute video that talks about the history of the common law grand jury and its capabilities. And then we do a show of hands vote of all those in favor of reestablishing the common law grand jury within the county of Manatee. And it's usually unanimous or nearly unanimous. And then we have to collect some paperwork. We need to do 3 signed, notarized affidavits that the meeting took place. So these are basically witnesses saying, yes, I was at the meeting and it did take place. And then we need to have 3 other witnesses sign the actual declaration that we are reestablishing the common law grand jury. We take those papers along with a file on demand cover sheet and a cover letter. And in Florida, unlike some other states, we send it into the clerk of the court with the instructions to file this in the miscellaneous file. Because the clerk is used to getting paperwork associated with different court cases, and this is not associated with any court case. It is meant to go into the miscellaneous file for memorialization, so that if anybody wants to verify that we took the right steps to reestablish the common law grand jury, they can. Then it's necessary to go in front of the Board of County Commissioners and begin the process of negotiating access to the grand jury room. And that's where we are in 3 of the counties in Florida.
Okay, so once you have access to the room and you've made the notification, then you are ready to select the jury selection.
Correct. And there's an awful lot of things that we know are already needing attention. For example, in Manatee County, we don't know the exact number, but we know an awful lot of people are in jail unconstitutionally. They either didn't get their due process or they did not have a victim. And if either is the case, they really are unconsciously being deprived of their freedom. In addition, one of the principles about common law is it's all about restoring the victim. But what's happened is our legal system has moved over to these statutes with all kinds of penalties and fines and jail time, but very little about restoring the victim. And it makes so much common sense. Listen, if someone got damaged, why aren't we restoring them? Instead, we're collecting a lot of fines, and estimates are that approximately 20% of the fines are actually going into the judges' retirement programs.
Why does that not surprise
you? Now, it's very important. I'd like to make one other point, because for people to understand how profound this is, for approximately 75 years after the ratification of the Constitution, no political leader spent money outside of the 20 enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8, because the common law grand jury in every county was like a watchdog watching to make sure they obeyed those limitations of the enumerated powers. If they dared step out of line, they would immediately be presented against, be suspended from office, and have to stand trial.
Ah, okay. Roger, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought for a minute because we have a hard break coming up, and I have to make an announcement, and then we will get back to you. So do not go away. This is very, very interesting, and I thank you so much for joining us this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, we are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com. Please visit our website, agenda21today.com, Roger's website, nationallibertyalliance.org, panhandlepatriots.com, KarenShone.com, and VoteKarenShone.com, and of course SaveAmerica.com. We can also be heard in addition to Blog Talk Radio American Statesman every Tuesday night from 8 to 10. We can be heard on RedStateTalkRadio.com Wednesday, 12 in the afternoon, Sunday, 12 in the evening. We thank you all for joining us this evening. Again, this evening we are talking about the Common Law Grand Jury, one of the tools that our founders gave us for oversight. That's the key, Roger, that you were talking about. Whenever people say oversight, 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 my question to them is, how do you have oversight? Their answer is always at the ballot box. But people, as we know, have short memories, and things happen in between terms of elections, and people forget. So what this really creates is a tool for oversight in an immediate manner, which I think is just incredible.
Right, and it's proven to work. It has worked for many, many years. That's, in fact, why the politicians, the judges, and the lawyers didn't like it. You know, you've got 25 people, and by the way, the number 25 is very specific. Over the years, it was found to be the hardest number to corrupt. And you'll find that the progressives have done things like, for example, in Florida statutes, when they call a grand jury, the number of jurors required, according to Florida statutes, is something like 19 to 23. But they refuse to ever allow 25, because then that becomes an official common law grand jury and can take decisions and present against the politicians, the corrupt politicians.
That's fascinating in itself.
So one of the fundamental things we have in the works here is the ability to, once we gain access, the common law grand jury can do two or three very, very important things. One thing is very simple. It could put out a press release that says, from this day forward, no unconstitutional laws, rules, regulations, executive orders, or treaties will be enforced within the borders of this county. Now, what does that do?
Wow.
Well, take Agenda 21.
Sure.
Take Common Core. Take Obamacare. Take gun control. Any of those issues are clearly out of bounds of the enumerated powers. Furthermore, as the rest of the 67 counties get their grand juries up and running and established, they likewise can do the same thing if they so desire, and that ultimately moves the border of nullification out to the state's borders. And as neighboring states do it, you can see the whole thing can become regional and then nationwide. And all 50 states today, I'm happy to announce, are hard at work reestablishing their common law grand juries.
This is a fabulous tool, because those of us that read our founders and have any idea of history know that one of the most important things they felt was that the education of the people and the involvement of their government was the only thing that would keep the government as a true representative republic. And once that was lost, we would slip back into what they were trying to escape, which was what we are getting now, a dictatorship, a monarchy, a totalitarian government. But this really creates oversight that I feel so many people are missing, and gives the knowledge of how to do it. Roger, this is so incredible. One of the things that people ask me when I mention this to them is, how do you enforce anything? Okay, so we do it. We presented. We said that the commissioners needed to be investigated because they were doing illegal things. What happens? How do you enforce this?
Well, The output of the work of the grand jury is in the form of a presentment or an indictment. And it's important to people for people to understand that the actual work and the membership in the grand jury is completely secret. There's a very important reason for that. They will be often investigating things where there is not enough evidence to charge someone to stand trial. And therefore, everything is in secrecy except for the output of the work, which is the indictment or the presentment, and the 25 elect a foreperson to speak for them. So that person becomes known, but everything else is secret. So now in terms of enforcement, the presentment or the indictment flows right into the clerk of the court. It becomes a legal document that there are very severe penalties for anybody who obstructs the operations or tries to delay the operations of the common law grand jury. I'll give you a simple example. If, for example, the grand jury were about to indict the best friend or possible spouse of the highest power judge in the county, so that judge is motivated to try to delay, stop, slow down, lose the paperwork, whatever, the penalty for a judge is 20 years in jail.
Woof!
Very powerful, very powerful penalties to not obstruct or delay the work of the grand jury.
Does the sheriff have a role in this procedure as well? Because a lot
yes.
of people are very concerned. I've been talking to, as I go out and I talk to the people in the county because I'm running for office, I ask them how would they feel if they went to their sheriff and asked their sheriff, would you follow the Constitution or would you follow federal procedure that is unconstitutional with rules and regulations that are placed on the county? And many of the people are telling me that they are concerned that their sheriff does not know what the Constitution is and what their purpose and powers are. So what can we do? Is the sheriff involved in this procedure?
Yes, the sheriff's a very important player in the law enforcement process, and the grand jury depends upon the sheriff to be constitutionally centered and do their job. And it is a concern. It is a major concern. But overall, the sheriffs in Florida do take an oath of office, and anyone who takes wages or salary from the public treasury, according to Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution, must take an oath of office to protect and support and defend the U.S. Constitution. We found in Florida there are 7 different oaths being used, and many of them are out of bounds, but at least they still do include the U.S. Constitution. Some of them use the words "and government," and that can create two masters and a big problem. So we've even talked with the legal advisor to the Florida Senate, and we brought this to their attention, and they said, yeah, this is screwed up. probably purposefully, but at any rate, the sheriff is critical, and we do need sheriffs to live up to their oath of office to the U.S. Constitution. Any officer of the government, elected or unelected, though, that does not follow their oath of office will, in fact, likely become a target of an investigation by the grand jury.
Aha, so the unconstitutional sheriff could actually be investigated as well. That was what someone had asked me. Well, what do we do if our sheriff is not constitutional? And I said, well, first of all, elect a new sheriff. But in the interim, I did not realize that they could be subject to an indictment.
Absolutely, probably a presentment in this case. But in addition, he would immediately be suspended from office, and the undersheriff would take over. And there are provisions in common law that even if the undersheriff doesn't perform, the common law grand jury can use marshals and even their own private attorney generals.
That is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been any state where there has been any success with this yet?
Not yet. The history of success is very, very broad and deep. For example, there is a book available online. It's no longer in print, but you can Google it, and it is called The People's Panel. The People's Panel by Richard Younger.
Mm-hmm.
And it was published in 1963, and it covers the history of the grand jury from 1647, I believe it is, through 1941 in the United States. So it's even before we declared our independence. And the history is filled with the very, very serious problems that the common law grand jury tackled and solved. For example, during the rapid growth and industrialization of our cities, all of our major cities became widespread filled with corruption. And the corruption was in the court system, it was in the police system, police force, it was all over. And it was only the common law grand juries in New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Buffalo, etc., that were able to straighten it out. So it's really been very, very profound tool that our founders gave us. And by the way, it is the primary tool to keep the government centered on the Constitution, as stated in the Declaration, that the governments derive their power from the consent of the governed. The progressives would like us all to believe that there's only one way to give consent, and that's at the voter box, ballot box, but that is not true. This is the primary way to give consent.
This is probably the most direct way to give consent, because it is something that would be noticed by all of the people in the community as it goes on within their community. So I believe this would cause the most attention to oversight of a variety of mechanisms. The common law grand jury is not limited to who they could charge. It doesn't
Correct.
Have to be a county. It doesn't have to be a state. Nope. It could be any official.
It could be anybody. It can be a private individual if they're doing wrongdoings. It can be any official, Washington official, that comes from the state. But let me tell you that in 1946, when the progressives basically declared the grand jury, so when we were founded, it was called the grand jury. And in our Constitution, it is referred to as a grand jury. However, today the term grand jury means statutory grand jury. So we've come up with the label common law grand jury to refer to the original one that we had at our founding and all the way up through 1946. So one of the keys is that I went into the historical records library for the county, for example, to research what did the record show that the common law grand jury issued for indictments and presentments historically. Well, it turns out you can go into this historical records library, which is under the clerk of the court in the counties of Florida, and you can find all kinds of records, the court records, the minutes of the Board of Commissioners meetings, the marriage and birth and death records, all kinds of records, but you can't find any about the common law grand jury. They have either been destroyed or hidden. But I was lucky enough that the librarian knew from what I was asking for that she had seen some newspaper accounts of them, and they had been preserved, and it turns out that every 6 months, a new group of 25 grand jurors were sworn in, and they would begin their term by taking action against the evidence or examining and analyzing the evidence for any criminal cases. And then what's quite interesting is they then went through a complete audit of everything the county government was doing. And when I say a complete audit, I'm including all the books and records, financial and otherwise, of the county, and all of the operations, the jails, the courthouses, everything. They would then summarize the defects they found in a public report at the end of their six-month effort. This got published in the newspaper for everybody to see. So if you were a public official and you were not doing your job or you were infringing on the Constitution, you would be called out publicly. And every 6 months, there was a new group of 25 sets of eyes on all of this, keeping the government very accountable.
Well, we need to go back to that, because that is what I believe that is what is missing. It is the people power. You are right. The people have the power. And it is our elected officials that are masking it and stripping it away, which is why we are now out of control.
Well, it's more than just the elected official. It is our judicial system, the lawyers,
right.
The judges. They have really hijacked the legal system. When I first heard of this, I couldn't believe it. I said, look, this can't be true. We allowed our whole legal system to be hijacked. So as I learned more, I had to do my own primary research and dig back to all the original documents like the Magna Carta that the folks up in New York were referring to in the NLA conference calls. And sure enough, everything they said was factual. I was just blown away. The legal system has been hijacked. It has been changed and morphed into a extremely profitable, high-margin business.
Well, that's absolutely true, and constitutional law isn't even taught anymore. Everything is taught as case law, which means it gets to be changed every other minute.
And that was part of the progressives' plan from Harvard Law School. The leader at Harvard Law School invented that idea and promulgated that idea to other law schools, that the best way to develop the ability to deploy the progressives' agenda, which would be totally unconstitutional, was to say, look, you don't have to pay attention to the Constitution and instead just pay attention to case law.
What is the difference between a law and a statute?
Okay, this is very fundamental.
Okay, and also add in there a resolution. Because we went to Florida last year and we asked for a property rights protection bill. So they were going to write a resolution, and we had a fit, but I would like you to explain it.
Okay. I might not be complete on some of these definitions because I'm not a lawyer by training. I'm an engineer and a business guy, but let me give it a shot. The definition of a statute and they were invented for one purpose. They are to be the instructions to the government employees of how to do their job. So if you have a certain government program, you need to write statutes that become the definition of the process that the workers are to follow to execute their job. How is this program going to work? Well, it's defined by statutes. Laws are really come from observing nature over time through the history of the common law system. And they're very fundamental common sense things, like for every injury there must be a remedy, and for there to be a crime there must be a victim, and the state cannot be the victim. So it becomes very simple common sense things that are executed in the legal system. Now, a resolution, as far as I know, whether it's coming from a legislative body like the Florida State Legislature or the Board of County Commissioners, is simply an expression of their interest. It is not, to my knowledge, a resolution does not have any binding force like a law does.
Right. Could I jump in here for a second, please? This is Neil Roger. our county commissioners did a resolution, which was a real joke. It was just to make them look good and act like there was nothing wrong. But this resolution, I looked into it, and when our Board of Commissioners, if one is not reelected and someone else new comes in, that resolution at that point is null and void.
Interesting. So it's only for the group of people that made the resolution.
Right.
And it's only a suggestion. That was what we told the legislators last year. We told them don't waste their time because we're really not interested in a resolution protecting private property when private property is protected by the Constitution, number one, and should be the prime goal of everyone's concern. So when we told them that a resolution had no teeth and we really didn't care, they tried to tell us that we were wrong and that a resolution was just like a law. Mm-hmm. At that time, I realized that most of them never even read the Constitution, nor did they understand any part of the law. That was what they believed.
Unfortunately, what you just summarized is more often than not true. We're finding a lack of understanding of the Constitution. We're finding that when you take an oath to a document like the Constitution and you don't understand it, it's obviously not going to be a valid oath. And we're finding that even as we submit some of our documents to the commissioners, like our writ of mandamus, with the legal grounding in it that educates, it's intended to educate them to their responsibilities. Because as an example in the speech I gave when I presented the writ of mandamus to the Manatee Board, I told them very clearly that it is their duty, according to the U.S. Constitution, according to the Florida Constitution, according to the Florida statutes, and according to their oath of office, that they must give us access to the grand jury room. But instead of really digging in and understanding the documents and understanding the legal basis, they turned to the county attorney, who has not been trained well in the Constitution or common law. In fact, most lawyers today are trained that common law is obsolete, and that's just not true. So fundamentally, he whispers in their ear, you know, don't listen to them. You don't have to pay any attention. So that's where we are. Our education effort is continuing, but it is not as effective as it needs to be.
Well, that's where I go back to school again, which is, of course, as a teacher, my topic. And I feel that the problem in our country today is that we are not teaching anything that even resembles what America is, American exceptionalism, why we are exceptional, why the Constitution has limited powers. We're not teaching anything. And I just told a group of legislators last week, that teaching the Constitution for a week, which is mandated by the state of Florida, does not teach the Constitution. And they looked at me like, oh, my goodness, you can't learn it in a week? No, you cannot learn this in a week.
In fact, on the NLA website, you might be interested to know, we have the test that was used in 1895 to see if you could graduate from eighth grade in 1895. And as a graduate of eighth grade, you could go into court and defend yourself, as well as you could go into court as a plaintiff, and you would succeed because you knew your rights and you knew others' rights and you knew how the judicial process worked. In addition, that test today, when given to our 12th grade graduates who have already had 1 or 2 years on the front end in front of first grade and 4 more years past eighth grade, they cannot pass it. They struggle.
I know.
So although the cost of the education has gone up and up and up, its effectiveness has gone down and down and down.
Well, that's why I always tell everyone that Common Core standards don't mean anything, because a standard is just a goal that someone needs to achieve. And we're looking at the wrong issue if we are eliminating standards, because you could have a goal that a third grader could read five-letter words or six-letter words. That would be a standard. By the end of third grade, all third graders must be able to read five-letter words or whatever, you know. The problem is not the goal. The problem is what are they actually reading? And they are certainly not reading anything that is of value. And that's the real problem, because the people, and especially as I'm going around the district, they know they have rights, but they don't understand how their rights work. They don't understand, even they don't even understand where they come from. They know they have something. They know something is wrong, but they have no way to connect anything. And that is the fault of the schools.
Well, but it was purposeful, Karen, because previous generations were taught what was called civics, and civics is all about our rights and how to exercise them. And now they're taught instead about American government, and it's very, very purposeful. It's all about the New World Order long term, and it's to take America's sovereignty away and put us under the UN. So at the end of the day, it can be reclaimed very easily. We just need to reinstitute a year long, or actually probably a couple of years in high school of civics. But I'd like to make another point, and that is that I, like a lot of other Floridians, were quite discouraged when the Department of Education at the state level took the feedback at the Orlando meeting, and when we gave all the negative feedback, they still said, no, we're still going forward. And that stimulated a little research on my part to try to figure out upon what authority are these decisions being based. So the first thing I did was I examined the Florida Constitution to see where does the Department of Education at the state level get the authority to set the curriculum and set the standards. And it turns out in the K-12 part of the Florida Constitution, there is no authority given to the Department of Education. Furthermore, under Florida statutes, there's no authority given. And the only thing that comes at all close to giving them any authority is there is a statement in the K-12 section of the statutes that says that the county board, school board, is responsible for providing, quote, adequate materials.
Right.
Now, put that in context of common law. Under common law, there is no way anyone has the authority to take any educational decisions away from the parent until the kid is age of majority. Yep. So all, in my opinion, what we're faced with is a crude and rude hoax that we the people need to stand up and say, we will not comply, we do not consent, we will not comply, and stand by, and we will give you the standard and the curriculum.
Absolutely. I am going around to the different districts, and I am talking to school boards. And one of the first questions that I'm asking them, because when I get the pushback of, no, we can't do that, and I begin to tell them that I even spoke with the Department of Education, and I asked them where they got their authority from, and, of course, I didn't get an answer. And I asked the legislators, where did you get the authority to push this on the counties? And I didn't get an answer. And I had in writing, I even have a letter from the Department of Education stating when I said, about the Constitution not being taught, and when do our students learn about the founders, the answer that I got back was, They get some of that in their government class. And I wrote back and I said, okay, so we're paying you $120,000 and you're the head of the curriculum department and you don't know the difference between government history and civics.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I didn't get an answer to that one.
Right.
But Interestingly enough, what I did find is that when I asked the school board members and the superintendent how much money they get from the federal government, and usually it comes between 6 and 10%.
Yep.
And then I asked them what is the cost of instituting the programs that are attached to this 6 or 10%. And they came up with it cost them 30 to 50% to implement these programs. So my question was, if I had a dollar and you were getting part of this dollar, you're going to get 10 cents and you're going to pay 40 cents in order to get that 10 cents. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And don't forget the history of this country that was really important during the foundational period up through, I'm not sure exactly when public schools were initiated, but education was really a responsibility of the community and the parents and not
exactly.
Government. And in fact, when the first, I just learned recently this past weekend, that when the first public schools were opened, they had to use the military to escort the kids to school because the parents didn't want them to go to public school. They knew what was going to happen.
Well, the parents then were smart, and I love it when people, and I sit and I talk to seniors, and they tell me, well, I only have an eighth grade education. And I say, hold that thought. Your education is superior than most of the kids that are in college. They can't believe that.
Sad, but
and then, we then go back to the charts, which show that how much money have we spent on each of these kids, and there has been literally no movement in Florida as to standing of education. Not that I believe in the test anyway, because that's another indoctrination scheme that makes somebody very wealthy. Not certainly gives no knowledge to the kids. But even just charting that, because we do use it as a measure, I go back and I look at the SAT scores, and I ask them between the last 30 years and today, how have the scores changed that we are now spending over, $15,000 a year to educate each child to have no difference in what they're doing?
Right.
Of course, I don't get an answer to that one either.
Well, It shouldn't surprise any of us. Tell me in my lifetime one government-run program that produces outstanding results. And instead of continuing to pour more time and money and resources into government operations, we know what does work. And it is get the government out of the way, let the people, we the people, decide how to spend our money, and you get tremendous results. And We have the proof, the history, where it worked beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's what we have to do. We have to continually go back to history before they change it into something that we don't even recognize anymore, which, of course, is their goal. And as we all know, we are doomed to fail if we continue along this path.
For sure, and that's one of the things that attracted me to the Common Law Grand Jury effort. It is a real solution. We know it works. The history is there. The U.S. Supreme Court decisions are there. The People's Panel book proves how effective it worked over hundreds of years in the U.S. And all we have to do is stand up across Florida and get together, and we can solve almost all of the problems facing us with one solution. We can get in the boat and row together versus the progressives are using a divide-and-conquer strategy. They continually launch unconstitutional initiatives to divide us and thereby dilute our effort. I'm convinced the more I've researched this, I thought initially there must be some kind of barrier that's going to come up that we won't be able to surmount. I am pretty much convinced that we're going to be able to get this done.
I agree with you. I think that there are enough people that are fed up, that are looking for a solution, and this to me is one of the most viable solutions that I have seen in a very long time. And Neil, you had a question?
Well, just to add to what you're saying, what the people are seeing in my area and close to my area as I go around and talk to people is they are tired of these unelected officials, these consuls, committees, all of them, where we are paying their salary, their bonuses, all their benefits, their trips to these huge hotel areas that they have conventions at. They are tired of it, and they want it stopped. I know in my county in particular, the people are in an uproar with what is going on with our police department and our city manager. If you have a problem and with the city manager, and let me tell you, he is corrupt as the day is new, if you go to the police department and you want anything done about it, they actually laugh at you and say, I'm not doing anything. He's my boss. He gave me this position. And these are things we're going to eventually have to conquer. But I did have a big question. What procedure do you think, Roger, when you go, you've already now, you've filed with the clerk of courts, you've gotten with the district attorney, you've done a press release, and you've talked with your sheriff. Now you're going to go to your commissioners. And normally who runs the commissioners is the administrator. He is the big gung-ho that is on all these organizations that are totally unconstitutional in what they're doing. But if they flat refuse and won't let you do anything, what is your next step? Because I have a list, and I do mean a list, of constitutional amendments, federal laws, and Florida statutes that they have broken.
Well, it's very clear to us that the first step is education and an attempt to collaborate and bring them along, because as we all mentioned, it's not even taught in law schools today.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, and it doesn't work, if it doesn't work, then there are multiple different paths to go down. The most likely will be a legal path that will hold them accountable against the behavior that they're exhibiting that is prohibiting our access to the grand jury room or inhibiting it. So, for example, that is, on the face of it, both a breach of their oath as well as obstruction of justice. Those are very, very serious criminal charges that they may face.
Well, one's a felony.
Right, they may face if they don't.
Well, see, I would be more than happy, and I know a lot of people in the state of Florida that are working on this because I've talked to many. I've even talked to some organizer out of state. And we are more than willing to work with these people. But at the same time, the biggest problem we have with our Board of Commissioners is our county administrator, and our Board of Commissioners sit on all these other agencies, consuls. I don't know what they're getting in return for all of this, if it's power and recognition, if it's an ego trip, what it all pertains to. But they are not about to let go of this. My county administrator here in Taylor County, he sits on four boards that are all into regionalism. All different boards.
Yeah, fundamentally, you're striking at the core because the incentives are all misaligned. The incentives are not doing the right thing for we the people. The incentives are to do the right thing for the politicians, their friends, and for them to gain more power and money. And it's been going on at least as long as I've been alive, if not longer. So it's a system that is broken, and the system then needs to be fixed. It's not even going to be effective thinking we can fix it by just swapping out new politicians. because the root cause isn't the person. The root cause is the broken system.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You're absolutely right. I was listening to, I went to a meeting today, and this was about the convention of the states. And the first thing that the person said was, you will hear from our opposition that we should nullify, and nullification is not constitutional. It's not worded in the Constitution. And, of course, my hand went up, and I said, it doesn't have to be worded, because the Ninth and Tenth Amendments say that whatever these powers are that are given to the federal government, if they exceed those powers, they're not, they are void to begin with. So there's nothing there to enforce. Well, of course, we had a whole thing about nullification. So could you please explain that?
Sure. So it's very clear that the intent of the founders, as written, especially in the both the Virginia and the Kentucky Resolution shortly after the ratification of the Constitution, that, as you state, any law passed by Congress or the states that is in conflict and therefore repugnant to the Constitution, because the Constitution is by itself the supreme law of the land. 50 states have agreed that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So therefore, no law or rule or regulation that is repugnant actually has to be tested in court, as is now done with the U.S. Supreme Court, and it is null and void from the time of its creation. By the way, one of the key questions that you'd learn in the civics class is, according to the U.S. Constitution, who has both the authority and the right to decide if any act of Congress or any act or behavior of a government official is constitutional or not? And when you ask that question, most people say, oh, it's the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right.
Yet if you read Article 3 of the Constitution, which is about the judiciary, nowhere in there is the Supreme Court given any authority to decide right. the constitutionality. Instead, it's the states and we the people.
Right.
So fundamentally, that person that you just talked about, talking about nullification, they don't forget that the Convention of States is being funded by a bunch of progressives, amongst others. The truth of the matter is, last summer, Kansas, for example, stood up and they passed a firearm freedom bill. It became state law. And basically it says not only are the federal firearm laws nullified within the borders of the state of Kansas, but if you cross the border of the state of Kansas with the intent of enforcing a federal firearm law, you're subject to arrest.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
State of Kansas. More recently, here's a quick little anecdote. Were you aware that we as citizens or people of the United States cannot import our pharmaceuticals? So it turned out that the pharmaceutical companies, with their cronyist lobbyists, got this law passed, and therefore they're able to keep the prices of our pharmaceuticals up relative to other countries. Well, you go up to the state of Maine, and it turns out that the Maine people were going by busloads across the border to Canada to get their pharmaceuticals, much better prices. So last summer, the state of Maine passed a bill that nullified the U.S. law that restricted our availability to purchase pharmaceuticals from outside our borders. So now, if you're a person, people in Maine, you can buy your pharmaceuticals from England, Canada, Australia, or New Zealand, even though there's still a federal law saying you can't do it. And by the way, back to Kansas. Once Kansas passed and the governor signed that law, a few days later, Attorney General Eric Holder sent a sternly worded letter to the governor saying, you can't do this. This is unconstitutional. And the governor paused a polite pause and then sent him back a letter saying, thank you, Attorney General Holder, for your opinion. The people of Kansas have spoken.
let's move to Kansas.
But the point is that anybody that says nullification isn't working, doesn't work, is unconstitutional, is really not up to speed at all. It is working today.
I brought that issue up at a legislator meeting a few years ago, and there was two senators that really come jumping out of their seats. Oh, no, we don't need nullification. And there was someone else there defending him and saying, well, that's what we have them for. That's what they're doing their job for. We don't need nullification. Well, yes, it is. We do need it because they're not doing their job, and they don't want nullification because they're going to lose their power, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's also important to realize that we cannot expect our county commissioners to stand up for the Constitution against the state legislators because that's their career path, and you can't expect your state legislators to stand up and defend the Constitution against the feds because that's their chosen career path.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, it's up to we the people to defend the document.
Absolutely.
What do you think if we went to our school boards after getting situated and bring up the fact to them that this Common Core is not constitutional and the Florida state statutes doesn't really enforce, especially when I am reading different things out of textbooks that are telling children to take two amendments of the Constitution that you want to get rid of, or they give them the Second Amendment where it states you're able to bear arms as long as they're registered. Oh, yes.
Mm.
We have seen this in books.
Mm.
Well, the problem, Neil, with that is really a lot simpler than what the people think, because it's all about the money.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to get the school boards to understand in the counties that would be in District 5, and that is you don't need the money. Because the money is there to fund the programs that don't belong in school anyway. Why? And I said, here's a very simple one. You're telling me that the people in this county are getting free breakfast and free lunch because we're in a poor county and most of the people are on food stamps. What are food stamps for if not for breakfast and lunch? Why are we paying people double by providing them a breakfast and lunch when they have food stamps, which the family should be providing breakfast and lunch?
Exactly.
So you've got to go back to the program that we're forced to put in the schools as a result of taking the money, which we shouldn't be taking anyway, because each of these schools could be funded by the budget of the county if you got rid of these programs that were just sucking the blood out of the county.
That's true. That's just like all the computers that are going to be put in class.
Right. I mean, there is no reason why you need to have all of these fancy programs when the purpose of school is that a child should be able to read, write, do math, have a body of knowledge, common sense, civics, government, and American history. And beyond that, the child does not have to be in school. There's nothing else.
To your point,
you could take a child's day and they could be in school for 3 hours and go home and do work, do homework, or do whatever it is that they needed to do. And if they needed extra time to be with the teacher, then that would be what the rest of the day would be for. But all of these ridiculous programs that are doing nothing more than teaching these poor kids how to do drugs, how to have sex, how to be bullies, how to get drunk, that's what we're teaching them so that we can create a program to eliminate the fact that they're doing drugs, having sex, and getting drunk and being bullies.
Yeah.
If we taught the kids, if we actually taught them biology, then they might understand that a fetus is a baby and they may not want to have one. If we taught them science and they actually knew and understood what these drugs would be doing to their body and that as they got older, it would be destroying their future, and we gave them some common sense, we may not have all these stupid programs that are necessary to counteract what we're teaching them in school. So I always look at the family and the school first, and if we actually, when I was teaching, one of the things that I used to do with the kids that were discipline problems, I would demand that their parents came to school to sit with them because it was not my job to discipline them. It was my job to teach them. And I only had to do that 3 or 4 times before the rest of the kids would know that if they misbehaved, mommy and daddy would have to come to school. You can't do that anymore because they don't want the parents involved. They don't want the parents to know. That's what you've got to get back to with the school board. You've got to get the school board back to understand that they didn't get elected and aren't collecting a salary so that they can be bobbleheads of the state. And they should actually look at the books and the programs that are in the schools, analyze them, and realize they could get rid of a majority of them. And if they got rid of a majority of them, and they wouldn't need the federal money or the state money, they wouldn't have to send it to the state to get it back, which is really what happens. We send our tax dollars to the state and to the feds, and they give us back a couple of pennies. It's all about the money.
Yeah. Very sad it is.
Very, very sad. But the nullification is a tool that's being used now. It's being used today in a variety of states for a variety of reasons. And whenever anyone says nullification does not work, it is not acceptable by our founding fathers, then they absolutely have no idea what the Constitution is about, and they certainly never read the 9th and 10th Amendments.
No, exactly. Well, apparently a lot of our representatives in Tallahassee, along with our governor, have never read the Constitution, and that refers to Article 4, Section 4. And it's
exactly
pretty plain and cut. That's just like all the bills. There should never be a bill brought on the floor about guns in any manner. What part of infringe don't they understand?
That's a very good question. Somebody,
I mean, should we make a card for them with the big word infringe and give them total definitions?
Well, the only reason why they want licenses and permits is because it's a mechanism to get money, and it's
more
a mechanism
money
to track people. And I was looking at one of the things that, you know, one of the things from one of the candidates, and the next big issue, I believe, is going to be the legalization of marijuana, because they're going to put marijuana under a medical terminology, and now they are writing bills that say if you have a medical problem, then you will not get a permit to carry a gun. What does one thing have to do with the other?
I am sure
that's why they're pushing the marijuana.
By the way, I'd like to recommend to your listeners not only to use the NationalLibertyAlliance.org website, but if they have any interest in learning more about common law, there are some great videos on YouTube by Bill Thornton, and there's one video called The Introduction to Common Law by Bill Thornton, and that's very, very helpful. As well as if they'd like to really understand what has happened to our Constitution over time, there is a video called What Happened to Our Constitution, or to the Constitution.
Are those on your website, or are those
on YouTube, both of them. Well,
okay,
the Thornton ones are in both locations.
Okay, could you repeat that so I can get it out in the newsletter?
Sure. For those that are interested in learning more about common law, there are videos both on NLA's website and on YouTube by a gentleman by the name of Bill Thornton, T-H-O-R-T-O-N. And the one that I'd recommend is called Introduction to Common Law. And then he's got quite a few more after that, but the introduction is a good way to start. And then for those that are interested to really understand the history of how did we get so far off course from our Constitution as we currently are, there's a good video on YouTube called What Happened to the Constitution.
Okay. That is fabulous. I will get that out on this week in the newsletter that I send out. That is terrific. Well,
great.
This has been very, very informative, and I cannot thank you enough for joining us this evening and clarifying everything that you have. I noticed in the notes that you sent me, and I did want to talk about this, and we only have 5 minutes left, so I apologize, but there are a lot of legalese terms that people don't understand, and one of them is a writ, and the other is the writ of mandamus, and if you could just explain that quickly for us. I'm sorry we have short time.
Sure.
But it's important that people understand that a lot of these words, where they come from and what they mean, are important to know. And just because you're not being taught in school doesn't mean you can't learn them.
Right. Well, for anyone that's interested, they can go online and look up any term in the best resource is called Black's Law Dictionary. And the fourth edition is probably one of the best editions. And again, it's called Black's, B-L-A-C-K, apostrophe S, Law Dictionary. And in essence, it has numerous writs defined in the dictionary. And the writ of a writ itself is an official legal document that is coming from a court of higher ranking sovereignty to a court of lower ranking sovereignty, or to a government organization. So in this case, the writ of mandamus is coming from the common law grand jury, which is the highest ranking court of record in the land, to the Board of County Commissioners. And in essence, it is, we command you to give us access to the grand jury room. And in the writ of mandamus, which is about, I don't know, a 10 or 12 page document, it gives the legal case that supports the command. And what happens historically with the writ of mandamus is that if you go all the way back to the Magna Carta Article 61, the grand jury issues such a writ that begins, it brings to the attention of the government official a defect, and it begins a 40-day clock, which is the period of time the government has to resolve the defect. Midway through that 40-day period, we also did a notice and demand with the intention of reminding them that they had yet to act and they still had the duty to act. And then after the 40-day period is up and they haven't acted is when we have built the legal case that there was a defect and they needed to solve this defect according to their legal responsibilities and the oaths that they took, and now we have evidence that they did not. And what that means is when they receive a writ, they have the right to rebut the writ with a legal argument saying no, that the writ is wrong or defective. But in this case, in the three cases, they didn't rebut the writ. They actually acquiesced to it. So what that implies...
Roger,
yep.
I'm so sorry to cut
okay.
you off, but we
yep.
have to stop. We are at the end of our show. Everyone, this has been an incredible show. Please podcast. Please share it with your friends and neighbors and get one started in your community. It is of utmost importance. This is the way for we the people to take back the power that everybody's screaming about. You're not going to take it back by throwing socks at your TV and getting mad. It doesn't happen that way. You actually have to work and do something, and this is a perfect example. Roger, please tell everyone your website again, and we will then have to end the show.
NationalLibertyAlliance.org, and I'd just like to say thank you to Karen and Neil for everything you're doing. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, too. God bless all of you.
God bless everyone. You are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, every Tuesday from 8 to 10, and on RedStateTalkRadio.com every Wednesday at noon and every Sunday at noon, in the evening. Thank you all for listening. God bless you, and God bless America. Neil, good night. Valerie,
good night.
Roger, good night.
Good night.
Good night, America. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.